potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the films Mean Girls, The Book of Clarence, The Beekeeper, Destroy All Neighbors, and Echo on Disney+. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a look back at Laurel and Hardy. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@thatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's drive by the box office really quick. Night Swim did not do terribly well. I mean, it did enough that it's going to make its budget back because it cost about 48 cents to make. But it only made just under $12 million for the weekend, which is on par with some of these Blumhouse movies that come out early in the year. But it failed to even beat Wonka in its first weekend, and it was that Wonka made $14 million. But it did beat Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. That made just over $10 million. And then Migration and Anyone But You were in the fourth and fifth place for just under $10 million. Welcome to January. The next thing, a quick reminder to watch the Critics' Choice Awards on the CW on Sunday night, January 14th, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Now, the other thing is, because we're in award season, I mean, because we had the Golden Globes last weekend, the Critics' Choice this weekend, Monday's the Emmys, and we just had the Governor's Awards or midweek, which was sort of like early Oscar presentation stuff they used to cram into the ceremony, but they don't do anymore. But the Golden Globes were last Sunday, and it was so funny because so much ire has been thrust upon Joe Coy, who was the host, who didn't do a great job. But look, I get it. He was given 10 days. He was given 10 days to prepare for this, when usually you get months. Usually you have a writing team for months going over this. And so people have been relentlessly going after Joe Coy. You also have to realize the Golden Globes have changed. It used to be sort of this freewheeling crazy time where all the celebrities got drunk and then blathered on stage. But this one was run much more like a traditional award ceremony, you know, something like the Oscars where they have timed speeches and everything. It did not look like the traditional Golden Globes, which I think is they're trying to distance themselves because of all the scandal that happened with the Golden Globes. But Joe Coy did fine. I mean, he was okay. He was like choice 12 to do this. Everybody else said no. You know, I'll do it next year. I'll bomb. I'll be happy to bomb in front of everybody. And the other thing, everyone's got all upset about the Taylor Swift comment. Here's the reason why the Taylor Swift joke didn't land. And I'm going to play it really quickly.
The big difference between the Golden Globes and the NFL... On the Golden Globes, we have fewer camera shots of Taylor Swift.
There's a reason that joke didn't land, and it has nothing to do with it not being funny or being about Taylor Swift. He messed up the joke. He stumbles in the wording of it. And that's what happens when you have 10 days to perform. He didn't actually get the cadence. He didn't get the delivery right. So it was a poorly told joke. And look, I don't know whether Taylor Swift was really throwing him shade or she was just goofing off. I kind of think it could go either way. But people are like, how dare? Oh my God, how dare you? How dare you make fun of Taylor Swift? Which he wasn't even making fun of Taylor Swift. It's just that he bombed the joke and she decided to give him a glare. It's sort of like when they're calling the nominees for something and Jennifer Lawrence looks at the camera and says and mouths a word, if I don't win, I'm leaving. And she was joking. She stayed around for the whole ceremony. People are belly aching too much about the Golden Globes, but you know, honestly, by this time next week, nobody's going to even remember that Joe Coy did this. Finally, the last piece of news is something that dropped midweek, which I'm kind of excited about. Lucasfilm announced that they're going to be making a Mandalorian movie, and it's not going to Disney Plus, it's going to the big screen, which I think is interesting. I think this tips a hand at what both Star Wars and Marvel are doing, although you've got different heads. You know, Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy are going to run this differently. But one of the things they've said in terms of Disney is saying we need to bring things back to the big screen. Well, yes and no, they don't. What they've been doing is they've been building audience on the small screen. And you don't always have that crossover because if successful shows, if people who were watching the shows and that translated to the big screens, the Marvels would have been a huge hit, and it wasn't. I think one of the reasons the Marvels was not a big hit was because two of the characters it drew from, well, one of them was like a tertiary character in WandaVision. You know, Monica Rambeau, I mean, it's a cool character, but she barely got introduced in WandaVision. And then Kamala Khan for Ms. Marvel is a great series, but it wasn't necessarily a widely watched series. So what they've done is I think they're going to be using the TV series as a testing ground for characters. And they've proved that people like The Mandalorian. And they've proved that people like Baby Yoda or Grogu, however you want to call them. So I think that's what we're going to be seeing. We're going to be seeing them test out stuff on streaming and still do shows, but then see what can work. And then they're going to probably start making, I wouldn't be surprised if they made, we're talking about Echo this week. Echo reminds me a lot of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I could see them start moving that stuff onto the television and the streaming side and then bouncing it into the big screen for huge stories. But, you know, just making a whole string of movies like Solo, A Star Wars Story, I don't think it's going to work. They need to also branch outside of their legacy characters, which they're doing with The Mandalorian and Grogu. Although that's a terrible name. It sounds like a sitcom from the 80s. But, you know, we'll see. Jon Favreau is going to be directing it, so I have faith. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Abigail, which is coming to movie theaters on April 19th.
You all came highly recommended. You know the rules. No real names, no backstories, no cell phones.
So whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
I'm sorry about what's going to happen to you.
What is that?
We kidnapped a vampire. A ballerina vampire.
My biggest complaint about this trailer is it gives so much away in it. And that's been a problem with trailers since they started cutting trailers. And it's not uncommon to see clips and trailers where they have scenes from the final or the finale or the ending. And I'm so nuanced. And even as a kid, I remember there was the movie Annie that came out back in like 1980. The trailer has a shot at the very end where Daddy Warbucks is picking up Annie and kissing her on the cheek. And even when I saw the movie as like, you know, a 9-year-old, I was like, well, that shot hasn't shown up yet. Oh, she'll definitely live, you know. But that's my biggest problem with Abigail. It looks like it's going to be some great stuff in there, but the trailer just gives away so much. The next one I want to talk about is Three Body Problem, which is coming to Netflix on March 21st.
Someone or something is targeting scientists.
They're going after our best and brightest. There's someone behind everything. You just have to dig. Whatever it is, it's watching and listening.
I'm intrigued. I am absolutely intrigued. Now, first of all, I am not a fan of Game of Thrones. One of my big reasons I don't like Game of Thrones is it just takes forever. And I'm not somebody who likes these long-form dramas. I mean, there are some people who just love the way they stretch things out on streaming, and because you can binge watch it, and it gives you, you know, a whole weekend of content if you want to watch a season or a couple episodes. But I do wish for some brevity in these things. That's why when I personally choose stuff to watch just in my free time, it's usually a comedy or something light and airy. I'm not looking for something that, oh, wrecked me. Why do I want to be wrecked? Don't answer that. Anyways, Three Body Problem looks very interesting. I just hope that it moves. The only thing I'm just worried about is these shows go on and they go, oh, we have 8 episodes and we're going to take every single minute of that to just milk all this stuff, just move along with the story. I want to see something cool, and this looks interesting. It does look like they have a lot to reveal, and it's going to build. So I'm looking forward to Three Body Problem, but oh, please, just make sure that it moves with at least a decent pace. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the films The Beekeeper and Destroy All Neighbors. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. Well, this one's a movie preview. Jason Statham stars as a rogue agent who seeks revenge on those who swindled his friend.
Mrs. Parker and I were friends. She was the only person who ever took care of me.
I just got a message saying that there's a problem with my computer.
Yes, ma'am, we got this.
Yesterday, she shot herself.
This is private property.
Do you know what they do here? Scamming the weakest in our society?
Buddy, I'm counting to three.
One, two, three. There, I did it for you. I'm gonna burn this place to the ground.
So, I was kind of marginally interested in seeing this because I like a good Jason Statham movie. You know, it's fun to watch his sort of January crap. What turned me off was then I saw that it was directed by David Ayers. He's best known for doing Suicide, the first Suicide Squad. Not the one James Gunn did, but the one that actually made a lot of money. That was the one with Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie, and that one also had Jared Leto playing the Joker. And what I find so fascinating about Suicide Squad is it did very well at the box office. It made over $300 million in theaters. It made plenty of money overseas. It was a hit. It was a bona fide hit. But it's not remembered well. And that's what's so funny. The second Suicide Squad is a much better movie, much more fondly remembered. And it kicked off The Peacekeeper, the John Cena series on HBO Max. But it didn't do well. It flopped for Warner Brothers. But it's much more fondly remembered as a film. And right now there's this buzz because he had this whole thing happen with Zack Snyder when he did the Justice League. There were these people, release the Snyder Cut. They wanted to watch what Zack Snyder's original vision of Justice League was. Because if you remember when they were making the Justice League, Zack Snyder's daughter committed suicide and he had to take, I mean, obviously, for very good reasons, he had to step away from the film, and Joss Whedon finished it for him. And it was just a bad choice because Joss Whedon and Zack Snyder as filmmakers, their styles and tones are about as far away. That would be like having a Michael Bay movie and then having Wes Anderson come in and finish it. You know, just they're such different types of movies that they would make. And so they eventually got the Snyder Cut released on HBO Max. And so the fans of the old DC Extended Universe have been pushing for a cut, David Ayer's original cut of the Suicide Squad. And he's still entertaining the option. He's replying to posts and stuff like that on social media. And he says, well, I'm never going to do it. It's just kind of the time is gone. And he's very bitter about it. But I'm like, why are you bellyaching? The movie made money. That's what I don't understand. But I've never really liked David Ayer's stuff. I think David Ayer's stuff is, for lack of a better term, I think it's mean-spirited. It's not fun action. There's an edge to it that I find very unpleasant. It's sort of like, you know, there's a difference between teasing. You know, teasing is you can kind of make fun of somebody and tease them and joke about it. If the opportunity is to get everybody to laugh, but if your choice of teasing is to make somebody cry, that's not teasing. That's just being a bully. But it feels that's kind of like the camp that David Ayer's stuff is in. So that's what turned me off of The Beekeeper. I didn't get a chance to see it anyways, but I have a feeling it's going to be just too dark and heavy and punishing. And I don't need to see that. So, I mean, sure, maybe it'll be a fine Jason Statham, January actioner, but, you know, I gotta say, it preemptively sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Destroy All Neighbors. This is available on Shudder. It's a horror movie. A struggling prog rock composer accidentally starts killing people while trying to focus on completing his album.
Hey, how's that band going?
It's mainly me these days. I just want to finish my album.
You have been trying to finish this album for 3 years. What's going on?
I think we have a new neighbor.
So you've killed somebody. Relax. Just need to know how to get rid of a body.
I'm not a mass murderer. I'm a mass manslaughterer.
It's time to make a hit record.
This one stars Jonah Ray Rodriguez, who most people, if you recognize who Jonah Ray is, he was in the new Mystery Science Theater, the stuff that was on Netflix, and then they moved it to the Gizmoplex. He was that new host. That's probably his highest profile thing. But he showed up in comedy stuff for the last 10, 15 years. But he stars in it. Also stars Alex Winter. If you don't know who Alex Winter is, he is the Bill half of Bill and Ted. Keanu Reeves went on and had a much bigger career in front of the camera. Alex Winter started to do a lot of work behind the scenes, writing and directing. But this has him playing this insane neighbor covered in makeup, you know, sort of like this. He's this heavy, obnoxious, sound like your Eastern European guy who's this annoying neighbor to Jonah Ray Rodriguez's main character. And essentially that's the story. It's a guy who keeps trying to focus on doing his own work, and this insane neighbor is so loud and crazy. And look, I am fortunate enough to live in a place where I don't have walls I share with neighbors. We used to share a wall with this family. It was a duplex. And every now and then the teenage son would, when the mom wasn't there, would blast his music. I mean, at the loudest possible. And the kid was just an obnoxious little dork. And I'm glad I don't have to deal with that. Now, I've heard horror stories about people having just thin walls in an apartment in just whatever city they're living in, and whether they're playing music or watching TV, or they're having sex, or they're taking drugs, or they're partying, or just talking loud. Neighbors can be really annoying if you live in a place with thin walls. And that's kind of what this is going for. And, you know, it has some clever things. I love the idea of, I love this almost Lovecraftian body horror approach to it, because he accidentally starts killing these people and then they come back to life, and like he dismembers his neighbor, but his neighbor, the head's rolling around on the arms and the torso's walking around on its intestines and everything. So it's a kind of an out there idea, and so it does fall well in the venue of horror, and it has some neat stuff going on. It has some very funny moments. It has some good jokes. So, I mean, overall, it's an enjoyable movie. The biggest problem is that it struggles with the main character. The character, William, that Rodriguez plays, he's an annoying person. He's that guy who always wants to finish his album, but he's exactly the kind of person who would be like, what music do you like? And you were to tell him, then he'd berate you for 2 hours of why your taste in music is terrible. And I'm just like, that's a little much, don't you think? I mean, look, if somebody likes Hanson, let him listen to Hanson. People should listen to what they want to. And it does have that element of that pretentious musician, that deep cut. He's the kind of person that would search record stores for like the alternate take or the original master of some song. It just, those people can be really annoying and insufferable unless you have exactly the same taste and you're in that same realm. So it doesn't do a whole lot of good things for the image of prog rock musicians, but I don't know. But like I said, the biggest problem is that it lets itself get distracted from actually telling a story. It has some very funny scenes. It works together. I mean, it has great spirit and some clever ideas, but it struggles to cling to a coherent plot. It doesn't always come off as knowing what it's doing. Any scene in its own was pretty good, but when you string them together, they do get a little bit nonsensical. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks because I enjoyed it, but it's not a perfect movie.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Mean Girls and the Book of Clarence. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Mean Girls. This adaptation of the Broadway musical follows a homeschooled girl who enters public high school only to get caught up in popularity games.
What was that?
Oh Lord, it's the queen bee.
Regina George.
Don't look her in the eye!
You could be really hot if you changed, like, everything. I'm not a girl.
We as women have to be able to support each other.
Get in, loser.
Welcome, Katie.
You're never gonna believe what I found this morning.
Your burn book.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
All we've done is make Regina hotter and revive the wet look.
Dance break.
Before I even start this, I have a confession to make. I have never seen the 2004 Mean Girls. I've never seen the one with Lindsay Lohan and Rachel McAdams. For some reason, I missed that screening. Most likely, it was a conflicting screening. There was probably something else going on that night, or there were two screenings, and I could only go to one. And I think at the time, nobody knew Mean Girls would become a phenomenon. Mean Girls was just this movie that got released, and then it got very popular, and then everyone was like, oh, this is the movie to see. So I've never seen it, which was an interesting way to experience this movie, because I don't have all the baggage. I don't have the background. I don't have the common language. I don't have the jokes already memorized. I mean, there's certain things you just pick up. Like, I knew the whole fetch joke. You know, I know the general gist of the movie, but it was neat to watch it without that, because I could experience it, I think, differently than most people would. This movie, the bottom line, it's made for the fans. If you watched Mean Girls from 2004 and you've watched it multiple times and you like it and you quote it and you watch the Broadway musical or you went to go see it or you got the soundtrack, this is who it's made for. And this is the actual movie version of the musical. So it's not just a remake. One of the things that happens when you have a Broadway musical, you got to have the Broadway musical has got to be 3 hours long. And Mean Girls is not a story that needs 3 hours to be told. Fortunately, they cut a lot of the numbers. And the last thing anyone wanted to see was a 2.5 hour movie of Mean Girls. So the movie is like, what, 1:50? So it's a reasonable length. And it doesn't feel like it's overdoing the songs. Well, yes and no. It doesn't feel like it has too many songs, but at times it does overdo it. I mean, it has these very innovative ways of doing the songs, and that probably worked a little bit better on the stage, but I give them points for creativity and kind of, you know, swinging for the fences with some of these production numbers. But they start to really get distracting at times. But I think the thing that left me with was it felt more like it was a tribute to the first movie than it was its own thing. This is not a David S. Pumpkins type of thing. It's not its own thing. It only exists and it only works if you have the background of the original movie and the Broadway show. Because otherwise you feel like you're missing some jokes. And the songs are okay. Some songs are good, some songs aren't. You know, there's songs that are better than others. The other thing it does, which grinded my gears, was it tries to update it to modern day. And so they have to have the obligatory appearance of social media, because you didn't have social media back in high school in 2004. You know, smartphones didn't exist then. I mean, people had cell phones, but this, now you have social media. So they have the obligatory social media montages, which, first of all, that's not how social media works a lot of the times, certainly not in the speed with which they do it. And I get tired of that. I feel that's pandering. I feel it's like, look, we know that TikTok exists. I'm just, okay, we don't... Can we just tell the story? You can still tell the story without those montages. It's just those become, they're the same in every movie. And speaking of same in every movie, one of the things this thing does is there's parts, and I don't know whether they're trite or cliches, because they may have created the trope, for crying out loud, because it's a 20-year-old movie. But like, there's a scene in there where they go into the lunchroom and the two people that bond with the new kid are like, there's the jocks and there's the burnouts and there's the band geeks and there's the sexy people and there's the plastics. I have seen that sequence in a dozen other movies. That is not how high school works. Yes, there's cliques, but they're not that well defined. I mean, even Heathers didn't have that. They didn't say, well, this is the Heathers and here's the jocks. No, the Heathers were just these three girls named Heather who were a clique. And that just kind of was their name. These are not political parties. They're not running a presidential primary. And the other thing is it also, I think, misjudges how popularity works. Like, everyone loves the character of Regina George in the movie. But I went to high school and I knew the popular kids, and people loathe some of those popular kids. It's just sort of the movers and the shakers liked them. Popularity is not popular among everybody. It's popular among enough people to take power. It's like, you know, we mentioned presidential primaries. Ultimately, whoever wins a primary is like a third of a half in terms of the voting public. So it's still a very small portion making the candidate choices. And that's kind of how popularity works in high school, is enough of the right people say that you're cool. But look, there is not love for the popular people in high school, let me tell you. But I mean, still, it's fun. It has some cute stuff. It has some good musical numbers. It has some funny moments. It's well acted. It's well put together. It'll click with the fans of the original movies, but like I said, it plays like a tribute rather than its own film. So I'm going to say that Mean Girls kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Book of Clarence. This modern look at a hustler in the time of Jesus sees him impersonate the Messiah and deal with the consequences.
I'm Clarence.
Where I'm from, you fight to survive. I'm not a bad person, just playing the cards I was dealt. Mom, one day I'm gonna get you out of here. I have a plan.
What are we doing here?
Jesus lives there. Hallelujah, baby. I need to figure out what inspires him.
I can just replicate what he does. Imagine the money people will give us.
Clarence, you are guilty of the crime fraud
for your own ill-gotten gains.
If you give me Jesus of Nazareth, I will let you walk free.
This is directed by James Samuel, and he's a musician initially, but the best known, he did The Harder They Fall a couple years ago, which is this black Western that Netflix had. That's actually a pretty good movie. I did enjoy The Harder They Fall. But he directed this movie, The Book of Clarence. And it's funny because I'm not surprised when I put the names together and I realized, oh, that's what he had directed before, because it has that scope and it has that grand period piece feel to it. But the basic story is you've got Lakeith Stanfield as just some guy in Judea, and he's living at the time that Jesus is, and Jesus, of course, was making a lot of noise, and he realizes that he might be able to basically make some money by pretending to be the Messiah himself. And then he gets caught up in sort of like people start believing in him, and that starts having consequences. He has to deal with it. It starts off as almost like a 2,000-year-old version of Friday. He's smoking dope, and he feels like it's an episode of the Friday movies. Maybe it's Good Friday. Who knows? But it comes across as trying to be a comedy. And then it sort of takes this hairpin turn in the middle of it, where it goes super serious, where it's like this serious look at what it means to be the Messiah and what you say and what you claim, and can that back you up, and can you become what you claim to be? Those kind of contemplations. And then it'll swerve into these comedic scenes. And it's extremely jarring. And it's unfocused. I mean, on one hand, it's trying to be like The Life of Brian, which was a farce from beginning to end. And yes, The Life of Brian was a serious deconstruction of Christianity. But it did it in the typical Monty Python sort of way. That doesn't mean you can't do both. But Samuels just doesn't do a good job differentiating the two. It jars from one end to the other. It feels like you're on a roller coaster going around these tight corners and just slamming back and forth. And it has some real mixed messaging. I'm still not sure what exactly the movie was trying to say. Plus, it was long. It was over 2 hours. You know, look, I mean, it was a clever idea to make a Friday movie about Good Friday, but this film can't decide if it's a comedy or a serious deconstruction of religion. I mean, it could work as both. I said, you can do both. They did it with The Life of Brian. It's just, this is not The Life of Brian. I'm going to say The Book of Clarence kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Marvel's Echo and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Laurel and Hardy. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap up the major reviews. And we're going to take a turn into streaming, and we're going to talk about Echo, which is the latest Marvel series. It's actually branded under Marvel Selects, and I think they did that because they want to separate it a little bit. This is more violent than your standard Marvel movie. There's stronger violence than, you know, just superheroes shooting energy out of their hands and stuff like that. And it carries a TVMA rating. It's a step that I think Marvel's making into saying, let's tell more than just the PG-13 movies. And obviously that's going to come out with when they make Deadpool 3, when that comes out this summer. But this one is a spinoff of the Hawkeye series. where this character of Echo was in the Hawkeye, and she was this assassin from the Kingpin. And what's funny is when she was in Hawkeye, I really didn't like her. I didn't like the character, but she gets her own series now. So let's go ahead and play the trailer for this one. This new Marvel series follows an assassin who tried to kill the Kingpin and inadvertently brings revenge down on her hometown.
You have so much pain in you. You. So much rage. That you can't contain it. You and I are the same. So? Who's the monster?
It's not a great trailer to listen to. And the reason for it is the main character is deaf. The main character can't hear, and by default, it's not that he can't speak. It's just a lot of times deaf people choose not to speak because that's not how they communicate. So it doesn't lend the radio playing as well, but there's a lot of action happening and all that narration is going on with Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. But it's her relationship with him. And I didn't like her character that much in Hawkeye. I thought she was just kind of bland. They had no backstory and she was just this heavy. She was this assassin, this person doing the dirty work who Clint sees a certain amount of humanity in her and takes, some pity on her. And when I heard that they were making a series of the character, I'm like, I didn't like that character that much. And I will admit, I'm all for inclusion and everything, but the character's deaf and she's missing a leg and she's Native American. So I felt like, wow, you really ticked three off of golf card there. I mean, but in the movie, in the series, Echo, it's fine. I think it works. I actually think this whole character and her setup, because it gives her backstory and it tells who she is and how she became to be. And there's a lot of humanity in there. And I was very surprised. Even from the first episode, I was like, wow, this is really getting into some nitty-gritty character stuff, and it's well constructed. I actually feel like they're building a character as opposed to just making this assassin or hitman or this heavy in the background that is the one person who's supposed to fight the hero. And I was surprised at how quickly I got sucked into this show. And it's not a superhero-ish kind of thing. I mean, it has some superhero elements to it and has some mystical elements to it, but that stuff's very muted. It's mostly about crime. And I like that. I like the fact that that's what Marvel's playing around with. Not everything has to be cosmic forces and, gods with hammers and people in super suits. It could just be somebody who's very good at what they do, like Black Widow or Hawkeye. And they've got some elements of Daredevil in there because obviously Daredevil involves himself with the Kingpin. And I think that that's good. I like the fact that this is hinting at other things that they're going to do which is exactly what the comic books do. The comic books, you always had your big cosmic big events, but then you also had these comic books that were much more pragmatic and much more normal. And this story feels like there's a whole bunch of these sort of, I guess, neo-Western type movies and series. But of course it deals with elements of the Choctaw Indians out in Oklahoma. And it reminds me of stuff like Dark Winds on AMC Plus or even like from To Hell or High Water, which was a Taylor Sheridan movie that deals with these areas that have a large indigenous population, and they tell the story of them in there, and I think that that's actually really kind of cool, actually, so I enjoyed it. I think it's this dark and gritty series, and it gives this really I think a real three-dimensional background of this character. I mean, it's darker than most Marvel fares, but this crime thriller has some excellent character development and a unique approach. I was surprised at how much I like it. It's like 5 episodes. It's all dropped on Disney Plus. You can check it out. I say it's totally worth seeing. I thought this was better than some of the other more sort of silly programs that they've had. So I'm going to say this one totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Karn. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. When I was a kid, I would go visit my grandparents in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm from Columbus. And Columbus never had a great, they didn't have a whole lot of independent stations, especially when I was growing up, like in the 70s and early 80s. They ended up getting a couple in the mid 80s. But Cleveland had a whole bunch of independent stations, and there was one called WUAB in Lorain. And they had this guy, and I think he was just, he was like a station manager or an engineer there. And he called himself Superhost, and he dressed up in like, you know, like a superhero costume. And it was a Saturday morning host, and he'd, you know, read letters from the kids, and they'd show movies, and they'd show like Outer Limits episodes and Twilight Zone episodes and Three Stooges. And one of the things they showed a lot were Laurel and Hardy. Now, we never got Laurel and Hardy down here in Columbus. I think at the time it was just you're at the whim of whatever the station had in their databanks. In Cleveland, they always had Laurel and Hardy stuff. I could turn on, and I have very fond memories of being a kid, you know, Christmas time or Thanksgiving or even when we go up there in the summer, and I'd wake up and I'd watch that on a Saturday morning in Cleveland. And I said, you know what, I want to go back and watch some of that because I want to revisit that. So I found a bunch, but let me just play a little trailer. It's not a great trailer, just because most of the best stuff that happens in Laurel and Hardy is physical comedy. But in Laurel and Hardy, in general, the legendary comic duo plays hapless nincompoops for her slapstick laughs.
She says that I think more of you than I do of her.
Well, you do, don't you?
But we won't go into that.
The Laurel and Hardy shorts, they go all the way back to the silent era. There's a whole bunch of silent shorts that they have, and then they did a bunch in the 30s, and then they did some movies in the 40s, and they still did stuff in the 50s, but then they were starting to really age out. Where I found a lot of Laurel and Hardy stuff was on Tubi. Because Tubi buys up the cheap rights to stuff. And like one of the things I got was like a bunch of Laurel and Hardy shorts. And it was on an old Good Times video. Now, if you like me, you came from the 80s, you know what Good Times was. Good Times was a cheap video service that would sell VHS tapes. And they'd usually get stuff that were inexpensive or the rights could clear easily or they're in the public domain and they distributed them. And they were not high quality, but it was a great way to watch especially old movies and stuff like that. And this was an old Good Times VHS tape that they just put on Tubi. And I got a chance to watch some of these classic ones with Laurel and Hardy, and they're so funny. Oliver Hardy was always kind of the straight man, but he was also an nincompoop. There's a sort of the straight man and the jokester. Like the classic example would be Abbott and Costello. Bud Abbott was the straight man. And straight men were hard to find in for comedy because that was very difficult because you had to bounce the lines off of somebody and you had to have that foil. We just had Tom Smothers pass away. Well, Dick Smothers was the straight man in that duo. And the straight men are actually more valuable than the goofballs. But Oliver Hardy was basically the straight man, but he was just as much of a buffoon as Stan Laurel was. It's sort of like the Three Stooges where Moe's kind of the straight man, but he gets in the scrapes too, and there's a lot of slapstick. To have a straight man who can still do comedy is very valuable and very rare. And that's why you only see it a couple times. And Oliver Hardy was fantastic. And of course, Stan Laurel was just so sweet and had such a presence that it really, really worked. I got to say, I can't speak too highly of this. They are brilliant. They're still one of the greatest and most endearing early century comedy acts of all time. I mean, you should check them out. Find them. There's a bunch of stuff on Tubi. Just search Laurel and Hardy or Stan Laurel, Oliver Hardy, and you will find a slate of stuff. They're very, very funny. Laurel and Hardy totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Founders Day and ISS. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.